Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Vatnsdal from the J.P. Morgan Life Science Tools and Diagnostics team. I'm glad to have the GE Healthcare team with us here today. Similar to all the other sessions that you've been attending, this will be 40 minutes. The initial 20 minutes will be based on presentation slides from management and then followed by a Q&A session. So for those of you joining us online via webcast, feel free to submit a question via the Q&A function. And for those of you in a room, we do have mic runners. Our only ask is that wait until you have a microphone in your hand to ask the question. So with that, I will hand it off to Peter. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel.
Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. I'm Peter Arduini, President and CEO of GE Healthcare. With me is Helmut Zodl. Excited to be here. I think we're the youngest company to present at J.P. Morgan. We'll be a week old tomorrow. So anyhow, thanks for your time and attention. It's been obviously a busy time for us as well, spinning out of GE, historical spin. We actually just ran the NASDAQ bell last Wednesday at our facility in Waukesha. The day after, we announced our new Chief Technology Officer, Taha, who joined us from Amazon, the head of AI and machine learning there, and also the chief medical officer. Just announced a small tuck-in deal on CT Amactus yesterday. Great biopsy and guided program, image-guided program for CT. And then this morning, we actually pre-announced our earnings and revenue. And so I'll start there with the press release, if you hadn't had a chance to see it. We had a strong Q4. I think it's important we kind of get out the information to help people frame. We realize we have existing holders as well as new people taking a look at the company. 12% organic growth in the fourth quarter, and that resulted in a 7% organic growth for us for the overall year. We also expect our adjusted EBIT to be in the range of pre-announced, both on a GE and a GE Healthcare basis. And then our free cash flow will be in the range, but towards the lower end of the range. And so I feel quite good about the performance of how we've done here within the end of the year, and we're off and running. We also, in the press release, you probably saw announced our outlook for 23. And just again, to reinforce it here, organic revenue growth of 5 to 7%. Our adjusted EBITDA at 15 to 15.5%, which is roughly up 150 basis points on a pro forma basis versus 22. If you've been following us or were at the investor day, we show this coming off of about a 14.5% rate. Again, this is all in with our stand-up costs included. And free cash flow for 23, looking at 85% plus, we've obviously communicated that we've aspirations to go above that down the road. So, again, excited to be here, and I'll maybe now transition a little bit more, talk about the company. Our purpose that we've aligned for the new GE Healthcare is really create a world where healthcare has no limits. I think we all know there's plenty of limits within care today, and it really takes a village. And as a company with the reach and capabilities we have, a big part of our focus with our customers, with research partners, but also other companies across the ecosystem is to really partner on some of these big challenges and to focus on it, both from a product standpoint, a digital standpoint, and particularly around a disease state, which really, as we talk about our strategy, we'll talk about our leadership and direction to invest in precision care and what that means, our focus in the company of accelerating overall growth, which we think we've got a great case laid out for, as well as driving optimization, the direct result of that of being higher adjusted EBITDA margins in the near term, midterm into the 17 to 20% range is what we aspire to achieve. And so a little bit about GE Healthcare, if you don't know a lot about us, roughly $18 billion plus in revenue, 58% of our sales come from outside the United States. So we're a very global company with a very global footprint. About 50% of those revenues are reoccurring. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on here. And we serve about a billion patients a year. A billion patients, individual, are involved in an imaging procedure or some type of hospital acute procedure where our equipment is involved. We've got just under 19,000 employees that interact daily with with customers around the world, commercial teams, service teams, clinical field research groups, and a large installed base, which gives us some real interesting incumbency to do lots of things, 4 million pieces of installed base equipment. And we spend about $1 billion on R&D annually. And a big focus as of recent has been our focus on AI integrated into our products, not just relative to post-processing, but literally how images and how capabilities are created. And it's put us in a leadership position, I'd say, in the industry on helping change some of the fundamental physics of how imaging is actually created today. Our business, some of you may know, we operate in four segments, imaging being our largest, which is just about $9.5 billion in revenue. Everything from basic x-ray, mammography, to vascular and interventional labs, peripheral vascular, cardiovascular, leadership roles in surgery and ASCs, as well as molecular imaging, PET CT, Nuke Med, and then what many people know us by is our MR and our CT business, all of those in top leadership positions. Our ultrasound portfolio, number one position around the world, very much clinically focused in different areas such as women's health, cardiovascular, radiology areas, and then a big growing area in point of sale, handheld ultrasound and tetherless type devices moving more and more into the primary care world is a big interesting growth opportunity. And then our patient care solutions business, which is a combination of, we're one of the top monitoring companies in the world, top anesthesia for delivering and managing anesthesia and gas at the bedside, at the OR table side to be able to drive volatile anesthetics as well as other types of anesthesia products. We have a diagnostic cardiology business as well as a neonatal business. And again, that's about $3 billion. And then our pharmaceutical diagnostics business, which kind of makes us unique in our peer group, it's an injectable pharmaceutical business that's solely focused on delivering and enhancing your image quality. So contrast agents obviously would be the largest piece of that. But one of the biggest growing and exciting areas is molecular imaging. And so radioactive tracers used in everything from amyloid beta plaque identification through products that are used in all types of oncology-based procedures, FDG, and derivatives thereof. We also then have, obviously, a large service business which spans all of this, and as well as a digital platform I'll touch on. So from a strategy standpoint, you know, we talk about precision care. Precision care really is about how do you bring all this multimodal data around that specific patient, convert it into insights, and be able to have it in front of the right clinicians at the right time? We think about that journey in what we in shorthand kind of call D3, which is about smart devices that have integrated connectivity. They also have integrated artificial intelligence. Just as an example, I think in the next couple of years, we won't have literally any products coming out that don't have embedded AI. I mean, it's just the way things are going. And again, more about actually how the machine actually operates and is integrated than actually, say, manipulation post-processing-wise. A disease state focus is something that we've been involved in over the years, but this kind of goes to the next level of really taking a look at customer use cases and challenges from diagnosis all the way through therapy and follow-up and looking at where we can play deeper, both in partnership roles, M&A, as well as our own organic products around that. And then our digital capabilities. We've got a growth, again, as I mentioned, in machine learning, but also in a broader digital platform that we call Edison with a significant amount of other products. Today, it's about $1 billion of revenue of software and digital products, growing at a faster rate than the company level, higher margins. We see an opportunity to extend this in the future. And so I'll talk a little bit about accelerating growth. You know, historically, pre-pandemic window, we were probably in the low single-digit growth range. We've talked about our medium-term target of mid-single digits. We obviously just announced this morning for 23, we're going to be on the high end of that range at 5 to 7%. But these are some of the focus plans that we have in place. My anniversary now coming back to the company is literally about 1 year ago, and probably a week right after, we jumped on a lot of these things from strategic pricing structures and capabilities to new product and innovation focus, as well as commercial execution, getting the right people in the right seats and such. And I'll just touch on some of these things to give you a flavor for it. Everything from, as a new separate company, raising the bar. Obviously, as an independent company, what we can do for stock appreciation for shareholders also applies to employees. Creating a culture that can be more entrepreneurial. We're bringing some top leadership back into the company, as well as new people excited to be a part of it. I think it's a really important part as we come out separately from GE. A focus on improving visibility. As a growth company, you know, see more, win more is a really important part of our philosophy. Getting those types of capabilities in place, we've been building out. The more this moves outside the hospital into the doctor's office, it's super important. And I've touched on some of the other areas here, such as strategic pricing. A focus on multi-channel, hunters and farmers, if you will, you know, dedicated hunters in specific modality areas, that's all they think, how to find those deals. And then specifically larger executive account managers that really know how to take a look at significant large deals. They may be $50, $100 million deals in 5, 7, 10 years, and how to construct a solution-based capability. Doing both of those and doing both of those well is how we've been wiring the company to do that. And our service business is really second to none. We offer broad, extensive service on all of our equipment as well as biomedical. We also have a large multi-vendor business. And with our growth and share of the last couple years, the service business benefits from service contract growth following the 12-month warranty period. New products, lifeblood of any business, but particularly in our world, I think one of the great things is when Larry came into the GE world a few years back, there was definitely more of an inflow of R&D monies coming into GE Healthcare, and that benefited us from being able to introduce more new products really in the last 2 to 3 years. And so the pump is primed. We'll continue to invest to bring new products, but this is just an example at the radiological show we just had post-Thanksgiving just a few weeks back. You know, these are some of the new big launches that we've had. We've had good growth coming off of those, I think evidenced by, you know, the 21 sales were 35% of that growth was coming from orders that were taking place from new products. You'll see that green dot on there. That's to signify embedded artificial intelligence, as I'd mentioned before. That's fundamentally changing how certain products work. And just to give you an example, I'll point out to two on here. Air Recon DL, where it shows kind of that sagittal brain shot there on the page, you know, take someone's 10, 15-year-old magnet and via the changes we made actually enables you to get 50% more patients through on that scanner, but also upgrades its image quality to the state-of-the-art of any magnet that's out there today. And when you can do that, coupled with bring in new products that are leadership into an integrated delivery network, that's a key part of our growth strategy. The other one is the V-Scan Air, which is the handheld ultrasound unit that you can see on the page here. And really, it's a great example of technology that's leadership capabilities, has the technical capabilities of the top systems maybe 8 years ago, but now is in the palm of your hand working with your iPhone or your Samsung, and then integrates your data back into the network. And again, these are other areas of growth vectors that we see across our business. So the result of obviously the execution on the commercial side, which is driving price, driving better sales and conversion, plus the new products is sustainable, high-quality performance. I mentioned earlier, 50% of our revenues come from reoccurring capabilities, and services is a big part of that, our service contracts, multi-year agreements. We have our imaging agent business, which is roughly $2 billion of revenue on a recurring basis, consumables and software, which I mentioned. And our goal over time is through, obviously, increases in software and applications, more consumables and services to continue to grow that, is to have a larger portion in a recurring basis. We're setting up our capabilities and already have subscription-based models, but further down the road, the ability to do by use as well as different types of reoccurring models is a really important part, we think, of our future. Which then leads into the third part of the strategy piece, which is the optimization and using lean, which is deep embedded within our organization to really find new and creative ways each day to do better. You know, this demonstrates here the historical 15 to 18% and the reoccurring spin cost here, which is in the $200 million range. If you tie out what I said on pro forma, that's roughly the 14.5% basis that we grow off of a go-forward standpoint. And areas such as strategic pricing, volume and mix, productivity programs across the board. You can imagine as a standalone company with TSAs, we have systems opportunities, we have rooftop opportunities, We have geographical opportunities to really optimize our cost structure because we're still running off a base of a large multi-division company. And so over time, that will give us productivity, as well as each of our individual businesses that are now verticals who own all the way through manufacturing or commercial teams have the metrics, they are measured on the results, and they actually now own the resources to be able to drive change in gross margins as well. And we think there's some really interesting opportunities on the commercial front end with value, not just pure price, but how we think about gross margin and solving customers' problems, and then the input costs. And obviously, some of the near-term benefits are better logistics and input costs coming out of the COVID window. And so this is our four businesses. The reason I like to show it in this way is obviously all of these guys are focused on growth, they're focused on margin, and they're focused on free cash flow. But not every priority is created at the same level. And so the imaging team and PCS, which actually have some great growth opportunities, first and foremost are focused on how do we drive up our margin. So they have some very thoughtful laid out plans on how to move from the teens into the higher teens and up into the 20% range over time with our margins, while also growing the business. Some of this ties to platforming. Some of this ties to actually how we think about configurations and geography. But this is a really important part of how we're kind of focusing on specific things that can change the complexion of our overall P&L. And on the right, with ultrasound and PDX, both of those, if you recall on the sheets, are 30% roughly EBIT margins, adjusted EBIT margins. I this is an area where we want to find new ways to grow. And in ultrasound, with it moving more in other sites of care, being able to prospect more feet on the street, more digital reach into new markets, it's a big opportunity to be able to grow that at a faster clip. And with our number one leadership position there, the more we see, the higher probability win rates we have within those marketplaces. And for PDX, for our agents, I would say for contrast, I think there's some growing demand with the amount of imaging procedures. And so being able to expand our capacity there and growth is important. And also the rise of theranostics and other imaging, molecular imaging-based agents. We think that MI is going to also be a growth vehicle for us here into the future. And then underneath that, you see it's underpinned by strong service delivery within our region and world-class enterprise account management. Coming into a large account in IDN and really at the president of the hospital level all the way through working a multi-year deal that addresses fleet management and bigger issues. And then our digital platforms about having a consistent approach of digital connectivity across the globe. And I mentioned Taha joined us as chief technology officer. He'll have many aspects of that, but digital in particular will be all reporting in. And we think that's really important to be able to leverage a very consistent approach to driving that. And then the result of all of that is obviously strong cash flow generation, which gives us more financial flexibility. I already mentioned that our focus in 23 is 85% plus free cash flow conversion. And then over the longer midterm is moving that obviously up into the 90s. This is a great business for generating cash. I think it's going to give us plenty of firepower over the near and midterm. And it's an important aspect. It's also a critical part of how we'll measure our teams all the way down through the P&L, which again will drive revenue, adjusted EBITDA, and free cash flow results. And with that, then, is aligning this capital allocation to the strategy we talked about. As you can imagine, a big part is tied to innovation, both on the R&D and product side, but also commercial innovation. You can see we've had about a cumulative $2.5 billion over the past few years spent there. M&A is going to be an important part for us over time. The Imactis deal that we just did, I think, is a good example. Feature set that adds to our capabilities, things that can take us into a slightly new area while leveraging a core of our capabilities. And so, that'll be five now announced since 2020, just a few in the last X months. And then minority investments and strategic collaborations. I spent my last decade plus in a mid-cap and really appreciate the need to be able to grow an ecosystem. You can't own everything. You need to actually be able to have broader partnerships and relationships. And this is an important part of how we're thinking about solving some of these bigger issues. And obviously, digital enablement will be a really important part of that strategy. And just kind of wrapping up here to say, look, you know, we think there's never been a better time to be in healthcare. It's why an asset like GE Healthcare with our capabilities at this point in time, when there's so much need and care, we're just super well positioned. I personally believe this whole focus on precision care, where we can bring multimodal data and turn it into insights and bring it to the point of impact when decisions need to be made, is a really big deal. And we are so well positioned to do it because we are in all of these institutions. We understand the care pathways and in many cases generate a majority of that data. And so doing it in an open system-wise that all players can participate is an important part of the strategy. And then with that, a focus on our innovative products and specific plans and commercial execution to be able to drive, you know, consistent mid-single-digit growth, as well as become a 17 to 20% adjusted EBITDA player. And so with that, Rachel, I think we'll stop there and maybe go to Q&A.
Perfect. Thank you, Peter. So as a reminder, everyone, we do have mic runners. If you have any questions, please just raise your hand and we will get your questions answered. Awesome. So congratulations, you guys. As you mentioned, you are the youngest healthcare company that we have at J.P. Morgan this week.
At least we're the youngest at something, right?
Yes. So. Yeah. So for investors that are new to the story, can you just walk us through really what drove the decision to spin out of GE? And then what's going to be different now that GE is going to be a standalone healthcare company?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for the GE healthcare business, there are a lot of things as an independent company, starting with just a focused board with deep healthcare experience that can fundamentally transform how we think about what investments are and capabilities. I think that's one. Focus is a big deal. I think the other side is the ability to be a more agile, faster company is just enabled. I mean, we obviously take a layer out of the organization, but you have your own balance sheet to be able to invest in more forward-leaning type investments with maybe a little bit more of a midterm range to them with an investor base that's going to be expecting to see those types of opportunities. I think all those things came together to say we can create a company that can have a significant impact on patients and customers, but ultimately a much bigger impact as a separate company for investors. I mean, at its core, that's what it's all about.
Helpful. And then during your investor day, you spoke about some of the opportunities for margin expansion, especially in that imaging and patient care solution businesses. So can you walk us through the puts and takes there between pricing, volume, and then productivity gains, and really what's assumed within the model from an inflationary standpoint?
Do you want to give a shot?
Yeah, sure. So we see a very clear path for our margin expansion. So we'll start around 15%, and we'll grow that into the 17s into the 20s, percent. That's really our objective, strategically, where we see our margins going. And I think there's really three key drivers, the way how we look at that one. First and foremost, it's about commercial excellence. Pete talked about this a little bit. It's about how we look at pricing, how we look at our front-end sales organization, and really, I think, the focus that we are driving, with those teams. That's really the commercial excellence. The second piece is around innovation. It's all about the product, how we bring the product to market, and how we have a new product with our customers to drive better patient outcome and also drive better productivity for our customers. So that's the second piece. And then the third piece of the leg is really around the optimization. I mean, what we look at, our business optimization is really a number of items. Again, it's organizational driven. Pete talked about the four different business segments we have. We're aligning each of our teams across those four segments. But there's also elements in the way how we go to market, for example. We don't need to have a subsidiary in every country. We don't need a rooftop in every location that we operate in. So we see a lot of opportunity to change in the way how we operate. And I think Pete mentioned earlier as well, today we are operating a lot of processes as part of an umbrella of a very large company, a few days ago. And that's really, we have an opportunity as we exit our TSA, define our processes really fit for purpose for our size and type of company. That's really how we look at the margin expansion algorithm. I think to your second question, inflation clearly has impacted us, I think, as an organization, but we're seeing really good line of sight that we're coming out of that. It happens both on the commodities. It's also happening really around logistics and other aspects. So we're seeing that really easing. So overall, I would say, a great opportunity of shareholder value creation ahead of us.
Great, that's helpful. And then maybe just going to the pre-announcement and some of the guidance updates. So you guys pre-announced the 4Q22 revenue of $4.9 billion. That was underpinned by 7% growth, 12% organic growth. So can you walk us through where were the key drivers of the business strength here during 4Q?
Yeah, maybe I'll start. I think, look, we had broad strength really across all of our businesses. There was obviously certain markets around the world, there were certain COVID flare-ups and things, and I think as an organization, we actually did very well being able to, with some of the processes and capabilities that we had put in and earlier in the year had actually played out quite well. So we were able to ship, be able to actually deliver for customers around the globe. But I'd say from an order standpoint as well as a sales standpoint, across all four businesses, in most, if not all, of our geographies, we actually had broad positive results.
Then maybe looking to 2023, you noted that you expect organic growth to be 5 to 7%. So could you walk us through the pacing of expectations here? And then how should we kind of contrast that with the 12% organic you did during 4Q? Walk us through the drivers on that 23 guide.
Yeah, so when we look at 2023 guide, obviously we built up our plans, our budgets, over the last couple of months for 2023, which is a baseline for that. And then we really looked at also, where do we see the lower range and the upper range on that. We have a very strong backlog that, we're coming out of 2023. The RPO we disclosed in Q3 was around, more than $14 billion. So that really gives us strength. And we're really looking together with our commercial teams, what is happening with the scheduling of our backlog, how that is going to happen over the next, 6-9 months. And we have very good line of sight on that. So that really gives us good confidence how we look at the revenue growth number for 2023.
Helpful. And then a few times during your presentation today, you mentioned the hiring of your CTO, Taha. So can you walk us through, GE's advancement in that precision care strategy? Taha has great AI experience. So can you walk through why is this an important hire? And then how does this really oversee that research organization and drive greater adoption of that AI component?
Yeah. So it's multifaceted. Obviously, for many of the companies that are presenting here have some form of a technology officer. Over the years, GE Healthcare has had one. We haven't in the most recent past years. And so a really important part, I think, of this is kind of the structure that we have is the D components of building the products are built into those four segments. But I'm a big believer, and I think Taha as well, is keeping some consistency relative to our digital approach, how we think about cyber, how we think about different APIs, how we think about capabilities. And so he'll have that group reporting in. We actually have a large research group that was part of the GE corporate group at the time. That owl is now part of GE Healthcare, which is awesome. There's some super great capabilities there. Those will be reporting directly up through the CTO. And all of our field applied science and research that works with our partners. We get so many great ideas and capabilities from our customers in the field that have great research PhD students. And then the conversion of that to product sometimes has been not as smooth. And I think we're going to be able to do a lot more of that integration. Much of this has an electromechanical part, but so much of it has digital. And as I'd mentioned, both in our products today as well as our platforms, machine learning is just across the board. And so with Taha joining us, from one as a cardiologist in background, spent time actually in biostatistics with FDA and also product development, but then the last 6 years with Amazon, chief medical officer, but the head of AI machine learning, it's a right balance for a company like us that wants to do both well in device and data, but we want to index more towards the data piece because we think it's a great enabler for the company.
Great. That's really helpful. Obviously, I'm going to have to ask a macro question. So can you just spend a bit of time talking about your portfolio and how you expect it to be positioned during this recessionary environment that it looks like we're entering? Are there certain parts of the portfolio that are more resilient than others? And then can you just talk about your customer purchasing behavior and what those conversations are looking like right now?
Yeah, maybe I'll start, and then Helmut, you can fill in some gaps here if I miss some stuff. So, we've been out a lot with customers and interacting on what's going on. Obviously, the great part about healthcare in general is the broader resiliency across the economy. One of the things that's just evident is the amount of procedures that are actually waiting to happen around the world, as I've talked to customers in all continents, is actually unprecedented. When you look at the amount of imaging procedures and the wait times that are happening in big institutions that might have been a couple weeks are now 4 to 5 months. That's happening all around the world. And so from our standpoint, you know, there's a lot of questions. Why is that? You know, questions from are people coming into hospitals with more acute disease because of put-offs during COVID? Is there more use of our products because of how expedient it might be able to get to a diagnosis to deal with labor costs? A lot of those things are all in there in the factors of it. But we're seeing a significant amount of demand. And as Helma talked about, our backlog then is at all-time levels. And some of that is actually, there has been some challenges shipping, although we've done quite well in 22 based on our growth. There's also much more input demand for the products. So, you know, one of the things is we try to do is actually how we schedule out all of our installs over, you know, months and quarters. And we've spoken to a vast majority of our customers. And what they would tell us is, as they're making hard decisions on capital allocation and trade-offs, a lot of the things that we make are on the high end of that list. Why? Because they actually drive productivity to get more patients through. If you have a higher staffing cost, it actually is more productive to obviously get more patients through on a higher cost basis. So we actually feel quite good about how the situations are playing out. I think obviously the labor cost situation for providers in the U.S. we keep a close eye on. And so overall, I think this is different in this type of recession maybe in years past for those reasons. And the last part I guess I would just say is maybe the insurance model obviously has evolved here in the States where more people have coverage.
Yes. Maybe I'll just add what Pete said. It's also different markets are behaving differently. So Pete covered a lot of the U.S. market, but when you look into Europe or you look into Asia specifically, there are different dynamics. So stimulus, you know, specifically in China is driving a lot of demand, and I expect coming out of COVID, there will be even more demand in building out some of the network that the country will need. So there's different dynamics that happens across, you know, different regions at the moment.
Perfect. And then just yesterday, you guys announced a small acquisition within that small interventional guidance company. So can you walk us through, even though this is a smaller asset, how should we think about these types of deals fitting into your M&A strategy?
Yeah, so look, I'm a big believer as well as Helma and our team that M&A in this business is a really important part of building the growth engine. And in many cases, our focus is really on finding those pieces that actually fill out the capability or the solution or the problem we're trying to solve for the customer. And this is a perfect case. We have, you know, great leadership positions in CT. I would say from a biopsy image guided standpoint, we had opportunities to improve. There's clearly a growth in biopsying right after you do the scan without having delay times. Perfect opportunity to fit that in. There'll be opportunities to further integrate it to one touch capabilities and things of that nature over time. Many of the deals we look at fit into that realm. But I'm also a big believer, and we started this, you know, literally after I started with the company over a year ago, is weekly we go through the whole M&A discussion. And part of it is a cultural thing in the company to take a look at and say, you know, 99% of things we look at may be not happening or going to someplace else. But it changes for your business teams how you think about it. If this went to X, what would we do about it? Are we thinking about that now strategically, how we'd move? It is about driving more agility and more speed. And as we get deeper into use cases and disease states, it's going to also expand our lens to think about what type of company we can be in our other near neighbor areas. So, you know, a deal we did over a year ago is BK Medical, which I think is a good example, using ultrasound in an instrument form, actually in neurosurgery, to actually assess a debulked tumor if you actually achieved all the removal of it and how close you are to other sensitive areas. That fundamentally is difficult, if not impossible, to do without the BK tools, because once you open the head, the brain shifts. And so this is a great example of, we understand the whole back end of ultrasound, we can actually make it more productive, more capable, but we're learning a new area going into neurosurgery. And I think that's emblematic of opportunities we see all around to bring into the bag.
Got it. That's helpful. And then you've talked about doing tuck-ins similar to BK. So, you know, what size of deal are you willing to look at? And are there any areas of the portfolio specifically that you want to dig into more?
Yeah, I think for the most part, you know, the term tuck-in is a good analogy. As Helmut and I have talked about, you know, we would hope to do as we get out and we're running in the next couple of years, you know, a handful of different deals of those sizes that would plug into this. to create the flow. I also had mentioned on the chart, you know, collaborations are super important, partnerships, as well as other non-M&A relationships in some cases, particularly as we build out our digital ecosystem, could be as important, if not more important, than M&A. But, you know, they'll range in size and scope, but I think that's really tied to the strategic value that they can create.
Maybe just to add to Pete's point, I think for us, M&A is also quite disciplined in a way how you look at it. You know, again, how do we look at ROICs? How do we look at the growth profile of the company? How we look at the cash performance of the company? So it's, as Pete said, we're looking at this in a weekly, really, with the team, but always in a very disciplined way before we make, you know, a decision on a certain acquisition.
Got it. That's helpful. And then just kind of a follow-up there, just on priorities. How are you guys thinking about M&A versus debt pay down, just given the current today's environment?
Yeah, sure. So I think we're very happy with our investment grade rating. And I would say our capital allocation strategy is very disciplined. So first and foremost, we are, you know, aligning it with our strategy of, you know, growth and margin expansion. But then it's very clear that, you know, we are committed to a strong investment grade rating. So debt pay down will be part of our strategy. We're investing in the business. You know, we've been growing our R&D substantially over the last year. And then, you know, M&A, as Pete just said, is on the agenda as well. But that's really in that order, in the way how we look at it.
Yeah, I think if you look at us over the midterm, this is a great cash-generating business. So to be able to keep our investment grade, be able to organically invest, be able to do, you know, the right M&A and potentially some other vehicles for shareholders, we think we've got the capabilities and bandwidth to do that.
Okay. And then can you maybe spend a few minutes talking about the most important technologies that you're seeing in the imaging landscape? We talked a lot about the focus on CT, but, you know, other areas of technology that you guys are beginning to focus on more.
Yeah, look, I think ultrasound going into all new areas is pretty profound, whether it be into therapy, as I just mentioned, or into primary care. I think when you think about a handheld ultrasound unit, that if every primary care physician had that, as opposed or on top of a stethoscope, and what that can mean relative to early diagnosis for patients, it's a big deal. What that can mean for a digital ecosystem of data is big. All of our products as well, looking at alternate sites of care delivery. So, you know, our surgical C business, which we have a leadership position in, that product has the power capabilities of what advanced catheter, cath lab, and vascular labs had just a few years ago in an ASC, an ambulatory surgical center. And so that's going to enable customers to bring more advanced procedures, orthopedics and such, vascular procedures out. I think photon counting, the next generation, which we're solely the only company working on, silicone-based receptors, I think is a big deal. We're actually counting every individual photon, what it means for dose, but also what it means for changing diagnosis, energy spectrum levels, big deal. The future of MR, non-ionizing radiation, the changes that MR will evolve. I mean, MR and all of our modalities are now being so fast that they can really be considered screening. If you think about MR just a few years ago, 20, 40-minute exams, you can do a routine 5, 10-minute study. And to be able to do follow-up screening that way, you know, I think it's less than 20% of cancers are diagnosed via screening today. That should be much higher. So there's lots of interesting opportunities that way. On top of the digital side, to bring multimodal radiology or cardiology images with pathology genomic information together to be able to assess at one time. And then the future is, how do you actually leverage machine learning to actually find the insights by thinking at those collectively? And that's definitely on our target of where we would like to play leadership role.
Great. So then as a follow-up to that, you highlighted a lot of new areas that you could potentially go into from a technology standpoint. So how should we think about innovation and R&D as a percent of revenues going forward over time?
Yeah, so we've had a big step up really since 17. I mean, we were probably $700 million range and we're over $1 billion today. I think in the near term, it's probably growing at the high end of our sales growth rates. I think we're in a good spot right there. And what we can do with all their productivity throughout the company and bring that back into our investment area, we think we're in a good spot.
Perfect. And with that, we are out of time. So great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.